The Beautifully Bear podcast contains explicit material and language that may not be suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the Beautifully Bear podcast. I'm Shelby Coughlin, the owner and founder of Beautifully Bear, and I'm so excited to be joined with my special guests tonight, Brittany and Rachel. Hey, hey ladies. Hey.
Hello.
We're back.
We're back for part two of our divorce series where we're answering a ton of questions that were submitted by our amazing listeners. And I'm super excited for tonight's questions.
Yeah. I'm excited nice for round list. Two.
Round two, fight. So I'll start off this party. How did your support network, friends, family, community, play a role in helping you through your divorce? This goes to both of you.
Wouldn't have been able to do it without them.
I swear.
First of all. And I will say, you know, Beautifully Bear, I'm not just saying this to say this, but this group of women in the community was huge for me during this time. Especially Shelby, you as well. We were unfortunately in bad places at the same time.
Divorce buddies, if
yes,
you will.
Yes, divorce buddies. And it's always better to trudge through something that sucks with someone else. So definitely you and the group in general was very helpful.
I agree. I mean, I'm going to shout out Beautifully Bear or whatever, you know. And I don't, and like you said, I'm not just saying it because I own the business or because I'm so closely affiliated, but because these women truly walked with me in probably some of the darkest days that I ever had and didn't even know it. Mm-hmm. You know, I had clients I was talking to, and at the time I was advised by my attorneys, you know, to not speak about this, to not bring it up to people. So I didn't. But of course, like a little piece of me, if my client would come in and be like, yeah, I've been divorced, I would be like, ooh, tell me, how did you do it? How did you get through it? And I learned so much from my clients along the way, and they didn't even know they were helping me. And just to also see the strength that those women were able to hold in their lives after going through that gave me so much hope for myself going forward, that my days wouldn't always be this dark, that one day the sun would shine again and everything would be okay. And as far as friends go, I mean, I genuinely couldn't have done this without my friends and family and the support that each and every single one of them has given me. I mean, Rachel, I've reached out to her several times and just told her I was in such a low place, and she immediately was on the phone writing me back, coming back with just what I needed to hear in those moments, because it's when you're in the middle of it, it's hard to see the end of that road. And another like piece that I would like to note for mine was the night that I left, right after I had officially made the decision for myself, I called my best friend and I was on the phone with her right before I put my bags in the car. And I just said, am I fucking my whole life up? And she was like, happiness is waiting on the other side of that door. You just have to walk out of it. And not that I think that that push was like the thing that made me do it, but I think it was knowing that she was there for me and she was going to support me and love me no matter what decision I made. I mean, she's like, you can unpack your bags right now and stay in your house and I'll love you. But if you walk out that door, I've got your back. And she did. I mean, immediately drove to her house. That's where I now live and have found so much solace, so much like love there. And my parents supported me. They were not at any point ever just like ashamed of me or ashamed of my decision. And that single-handedly helped me get through every hard moment.
And you really find out, you know, who does have your back in those situations. You know, the friend that was there for you, for me, when my husband no longer wanted me in the house, I packed up in 24 hours. I had two friends with boxes and packing tape and got it into a storage unit. And I slept at my friend's parents' house for 3 weeks because I didn't have any family here. I had to rely on the friends that I did have. And there was no questions asked. They were like, nope, we'll be there. We'll pack it up. We'll get you out and whatever you need. And the friends who have been there longer, that have been through different life stages, the bridesmaids that are supposed to be at the divorce party helping you, they were there too. And it's crazy how you do figure out who really is there for you when you do go through those tough times. And I'm so thankful for them.
Yeah. Oh, you 100% find out who's there for you and who's not picking sides, and putting quotes around that, not picking sides, but realistically, like, not picking sides, picking a side in a lot of ways. And you start to realize who's really going to show up for you and who's not. And as painful as that can be, I also think it's beautiful because you learn so much about your own strength in those moments of realizing that you don't have to necessarily be chosen by anybody, but you're going to appreciate the people who do choose you even more for that reason. All right. Did you experience any financial difficulties or concerns during or after your divorce? And how did you address them?
Ooh, this is a tough one.
This is a loaded one.
It is a loaded one.
I put the bullets in the gun. Here you go.
Because also, I just think the answer in general is yes. I think everyone experiences some sort of financial difficulty during divorce. I mean, there's a lot of people that don't get divorces because of the financial difficulty.
Yeah.
A lot of people rely on a two-income household in order to help, you know, feed the kids and pay for the car note and just live, especially in today's day and age. Everything is expensive.
Yes.
So for me, it was a big change from going from a household that had two incomes back down to my income. And I didn't really leave with a ton of things. I only had a mattress and a couch for furniture. So I was repurchasing a lot of things that I wanted to have in a home because missing those things kept me in a worse mental state.
Mm-hmm.
But that also is financially putting yourself a little back. You know, did I need the new decor for the walls for me to smile at every day?
Yes.
Thank you, Rachel. Yes, I did need it.
Yes, you did.
So there's a little bit of things that you do have to buy and repurchase. And also just little things I didn't realize that were going to be bigger finances. My car insurance, for example, being with another car and being married gets you a discount, apparently. So my car insurance went from $75 a month to $220.
Oh, gross.
Just after getting a divorce and having one less car on the policy. So those little sneaky financial things that I didn't really foresee coming until it actually happened were nice little surprises.
Yeah.
I think for me, the biggest thing I did to address them is really sit down and just figure out what I needed and what I was spending it on. I know everyone's biggest financial advice is start a budget, but you don't really know how much money you're spending, at least for me, when you're spending money with someone else. Because, you know, sometimes it's a joint credit card, sometimes it's the joint account, maybe it's their personal stuff, and like things and money are always there. So when it came down to me, I just needed to realize where money was going, and find the unnecessary things in order to prioritize things like decorating my house for my happiness.
Yeah.
How about you, Shelby? Did you experience any of this?
Oh, yeah. So
I know you said you'd rather live in a box last week, but right. I don't think you live in a box. So
no, I don't live in a box. I live in a very nice box, if we're going to call it that. Definitely experienced some financial difficulties. We went from, you know, like you said, two incomes. We had been accustomed to two incomes for, you know, 12 years at this point. We pretty much started sharing financials right off the bat. We moved in together 6 months after being together. So, I mean, everything I ever knew about money pretty much my entire adult and slight pre-adult life was always wrapped up into two incomes. And he made the majority of the money. And so there was a level of comfort surrounding that that I had become accustomed to. And I knew leaving that would happen. I mean, that was part of my fears of leaving was how the hell am I going to afford to live, period. And so when I left, I took a bag of clothes for me, a bag of clothes for my daughter, a bag of toys, and that's what we left with. And I immediately went into, she has to have stuff for her room. I don't want to take things from her her room at our house, because in my mind it was, I don't want her to see that as separation. Yeah. Like, I want her to have her things at my house, have her things like they were at his house. Mm. And so maybe that would like make the transition smoother for her. These were my thought processes.
Yeah. Which, and I think is great. By
yeah.
the way.
Yeah. Thank consistency. You. It's important.
I didn't take a single piece of furniture. I immediately repurchased some things. I ended up doing like that. It was like a Firm or whatever through Walmart. That's what I could afford to do. It was like $120 a month. I was able to get a bed, a dresser.
I did the same thing on Wayfair, so I feel you.
Yes.
I love Wayfair. It made it look more reasonable when it was a big purchase.
It did. It made it way more reasonable. And there was no interest tacked on, which was really nice.
It's great.
It'll be paid off in like a month. So shout out to me. But, I mean, it was really important to me to be able to kind of make it cozy and, like, homey for me and Millie and our, you know, our bedrooms that we so graciously have been given. Mm. So.
Well, it's important for your mental health and for her as well. Like you said, you didn't want her to see that separation. So, for you, it was a little bit more of a need to get those things.
Yeah. And, I mean, she has her JoJo Siwa room. She's very happy with it. It's all the girly things and unicorns, and it's beautiful. And then I was able to have the bed frame that I wanted for like 4 years and was told that it wasn't cute. And I was like, fuck you, I'm getting it.
I'm sure it's cute as shit.
It was nice. And I just, this goes back to like kind of what we were talking about last week, like being able to make those decisions for yourself. I didn't have to ask anybody else's opinion on what color fucking bed sheets I wanted. I just got them. Mm.
This cracks me up that I did the same thing. I went from a house that was very whites, grays, tans, like very neutral colors, and my walls are dark blue. I have colorful curtains, like this backdrop here. I have pink bed sheets, a yellow ottoman. Like, hell, I was just throwing color in my life because I shouldn't say I wasn't allowed to have it. It was just something that was not in our home.
Yeah.
And that's what made me happy. So I got color.
I got pink sheets. It was really life-changing for me, honestly. Like, look, you're going through a divorce, get you some fucking pink sheets. It'll change your life.
Mine are purple. I feel you.
Hey.
All right. So what advice do we have for women who are considering a divorce but may be hesitant or unsure about taking that step?
I think the biggest piece of advice that I would say is, you're never going to be 100%, you know, like you're always going to, even if it's like a 0.1% doubt in your mind, I think that's what people are waiting for, is that like surefire decision and you've got everything figured out. And I think part of divorce is that you don't have everything figured out and you're going to learn as you go. You're going to learn along the way. And like, no matter what, you can figure it out. Everything in life is figure outable, and you can quote me on that. The shit's going to be on my tombstone. Everything in life is figure outable. And even when I left, you know, and I think a lot of people have come to me and talked to me about my divorce that know now, they're like, how did you know? What was your like your eye opening moment? And for me, it was just clarity on the decision that I was making. But that didn't mean that I wasn't scared. That didn't mean that I didn't have doubts in my mind that I wasn't making the right decision. I mean, I'm fueled with anxiety over simple things, like this being one of the biggest decisions I made in my life, aside from actually choosing to get married. Mm. And I think it's to know that you'll know in your heart when it's right, and it's not going to feel like the easiest decision in the world, and that's okay.
And along with that, the cliche that it is, life is too short to be unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
We are not around for very long. We don't get many years of our 20s.
You are correct. Thank God.
Thank God. But it's too short to be unhappy and be stuck in a dysregulated state where you always feel like a part of you is missing or you're having anxiety or any of that.
Yeah.
There's a light at the end of the tunnel, even if the tunnel's a long one.
Mm-hmm.
My word of advice is, don't stay married out of obligation.
Don't do it.
Don't do it.
Don't do it. Don't do it. Do it because you want to.
And I think a lot of people do feel that. I know last week we touched a little bit on the religious aspect of it. But there's a lot of societal obligations, you know. I think a lot of people still do look down on divorce, which is surprising because the divorce rate is like 66% or something. Yeah. Like, it's more than half of marriages end in divorce. So it's not really I shouldn't say it's not a big deal anymore, but there should be less of a stigma about it because people are realizing that life is too short to spend it with someone who is not making you happy.
Yes. Yep. You're not stuck in it. You got a choice.
I think recognizing that you have choices is a huge step in that direction. I think if you're considering divorce, I think sitting yourself down and saying you do have a choice in this, you're not stuck, no matter what it means. And I've watched friends of mine, I've watched clients of mine stay because of one reason or the other. You know, we have a kid together. We have this loan together, these finances. And the thing is all of that can be sorted and figured out along the way. And as much as like it sounds good to say that that's the thing that's keeping you, I think that fear is the thing that might be keeping you more than anything else.
Fear. Yeah. Yep.
And you know what sits on the other side of fear? A whole other life.
A happy one.
Mm-hmm.
Sure do. And you know, the where you feel fear in your brain is the same place you feel excitement. So there you have it.
That is really good. I like that. There you have it. You may feel fear now, but, yeah, but you're bound to feel excitement as well.
That's a good point.
All right. So let's see here. How do you navigate keeping or removing your ex's family name?
Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh. Times two.
Are you going to do it? Are you going to do it?
So I am keeping my married name. Mm. Honestly, it keeps me and my daughter having the same name, but like that for me wasn't even like the biggest factor. So a lot of people don't know this about me. When I was 21 years old, I was adopted. And when I was 21 years old, I was already married. So my last name prior to being married legally has actually changed. And it's a name that I've never gone by. Mm. And not that I'm not proud of it or don't love it, but it's just something that I've never gone by. And I figure eventually I will probably remarry. I mean, I'm pretty certain that I will. But
you got a 50-50 chance.
You know. And when I make that next step, I will definitely change my name. I won't keep my current last name. So I really don't have any like significant ties to it one way or the other. It doesn't make me feel ick or to keep it. So
I'm also keeping my name.
Okay. All right.
At least for now. First off, it is such a pain to change your name.
Amen.
Literally.
I never changed mine. I'm still like, my
the amount original name. Of hoops you have to jump through, the things you have to change. I mean, just take a moment to think of all the things that your name is on in life.
Mm-hmm.
A lot.
It's not just your driver's license and passport. It is every bank account, the postal service, every credit card, contracts. MLGW, contracts. Yeah. Like literally everything in your life has your name attached to it that you have to change.
Mm-hmm.
So number one, besides the fact that it's just hugely inconvenient, for me, it's the name that I've had for my adult part of life. I know last week I mentioned that I had been in school forever and I had met my ex 2 months out of school. So my entire adult life, I've been associated with this name. And for me, I've built that up professionally as well. So not only do I have the personal aspects of a name change, but also the professional, my license, my malpractice, the insurance companies I'm in network with, and also my entire patient base that I've built up. My career is based on this name. So for me, it's just a little bit of the harshness of having to change it. But also, it's just an easier last name. It makes my life easier for patients to say it. And I do resonate with the person that I've become with this last name. For me, going through divorce has been one of the biggest self-realization growth periods that I've had. And even though I had my maiden name for most of my life, obviously up until a couple years ago, I don't resonate with that as much anymore just because I am not the same person I was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And I still have it. I mean, my maiden name is my middle name. Mm. So I technically didn't lose my personal family name. I made that choice when I got married. I still wanted to keep that part of me. So I still have that, but I've just made so much growth in the last 6 months with this person that I am now that I don't necessarily want to go back to who I was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And who knows? I might get married again someday. Definitely not in the cards I'm looking at right now, but
again, 50-50 chance. Who knows?
You never
know. The psychic might be right. It might be wrong. Who knows?
Who knows?
She didn't see a psychic.
I did not, to confirm. Okay.
How did you rediscover your identity and sense of self after divorce? I feel like we've touched on this a lot.
We have touched on it. It's weird to have to sit down with yourself, because I'm sure you've even had these moments where you didn't have your daughter with you, where you're alone and you have to sit there and think, what do I like to do?
Yeah. Oh, it's weird.
It's weird to not, especially in your position where not only were you thinking about a partner, but you're also thinking about your child.
Mm-hmm.
And so not, you weren't even coming second. You were usually coming third. And so to have the time to sit with mm-hmm. yourself and be like, what do I want to do today?
Yeah.
Is one of the most freeing things I think that came of it is I actually got to put myself first. How about you, Shelby?
I agree. I, especially with the motherhood piece of it, and I think this has also been like the hardest piece of it for me is sharing time with my daughter. And so I'd have, for the first time, you know, in her entire life, she's six, had that time to sit completely alone with myself and not have to wear any hats in those moments. And it's quite terrifying sometimes, honestly.
You're like, I am alone with myself.
Yeah. And to realize that for basically my entire life, I haven't had any hobbies. Like I didn't have anything that was just for me. And so finding like my little things that are for me was wild. I mean, I really like this. I really like essential oils, right?
And hell so, yeah. What's your smell? What's your thing?
I love lemon. Mm. Lemon just makes me mm-hmm. super happy. Frankincense is amazing. Mm. And I say I partner with Young Living solely because I get the discount. So. Love them. And their blends are just top tier. Stress relief has really gotten me through some hard days. Or liquid Xanax. It's all oils.
This is not sponsored, everybody. Right now.
This is not sponsored. But if they hear this and they would like to.
Yeah, please send us the variety pack. We would love to put them in our studio.
All of them. I would use all of them. Thank you.
But it is interesting because even if you think about the hobbies that you've done in the last couple years, it's probably something that your partner enjoyed or your family enjoyed doing together. Not necessarily something that you did. And I've kind of had to go through that list sometimes of like, okay, what are some other things that I've done in the past? And I'm like, oh, I used to do that because he wanted to do that.
Uh-huh.
Or we did mm-hmm. this because our friends did that. So yeah. It kind of scratches some things off the list. Doesn't mean you can never not do them, but it is kind of terrifying and fun to find the things you do enjoy.
I know, it's weird.
What's one thing that you've found again that you didn't do previously that you've found that you enjoy? These new hobbies, if we're talking about them.
I know. I'm still working on the list, you guys. It's a process.
It is.
I feel like my business is my hobby at this point in some ways.
I mean, that's fair.
It's your art.
It is. I mean, it's like painting.
Yeah, it is.
Honestly, one of my best hobbies is being able to hang out with my friends and talk to them. Because there was a really big portion where I wasn't really allowed to take care of my friendships in the way in which I wanted to take care of my friendships. And it's been really nice to be able to have a girls' night and to be able to sit down and just talk and vent and like get all of the feels out and not feel guilty about it and not feel like, oh, this is going to be something I only get to do once every 6 months. Like being able to have my friendships in my life and be able to pour into them has been really great for me. Really just taking care of myself too, like getting back to enjoying the things. Like I love cleaning, right? But cleaning used to feel so like a chore to me when I was married. And now I've gotten back into like really just enjoying taking care of my space, because for me, it feels like I'm taking care of my mental space. And if I'm like not in a clean environment, it can put me in an ick kind of mood. And so it's been really nice to be able to like hone in on those things and really like take care of myself in that way. Or if I want to take a hot bath for 2 hours, like there's nobody to bitch me about
it. Fuck yeah, do it. I fully support that.
Fuck yeah, do it.
Fully support it. Now that I know that you do that, I'll get you bath bombs and things of that nature.
Oh my God, I love bath bombs. Love, it makes me so happy.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever get the ones that have like a surprise inside?
Yes, I do. Have you gotten the glowy one where it has glowy lights inside? No. Oh, it's great.
No. I've never had either of these things you were talking about, and I'm really
I'm
sad
pretty
now.
Sure they're mostly they're directed great. For children, but I buy them, so.
Okay, well, they got these at Ulta, and they're little like glow bath bombs, and of course, like once it all disintegrates, it has this like glowy light, so your bathtub is lit up green.
Okay, it's that so is amazing. Cool. I love that.
It's really cool.
When I was pregnant, I splurged on myself once and got a Lush bath bomb.
Oh, I love Lush.
They're so good.
Oh my God,
they're
$20. They're so expensive.
I don't give a damn.
Cut that bitch in half. Have two baths out of it.
That's exactly what I do, actually. It's fine. It's what we call budgeting.
All right, you two. So what advice would you give to parents going through a divorce to help support their children's emotional well-being?
Okay, so for me, I actually immediately went to my therapist about this. Immediately. And I went to my child's therapist about it as well because I wanted to make sure that I wasn't straying her in any kind of weird way that was going to like impact her for the rest of her life. And the number one thing and advice I was given by therapists, psychologists, was to be open and honest. Don't lie to her. Don't sugarcoat things to her. Because, I mean, I think the initial parental instinct is to make everything okay. And I think that was for sure what I felt in my body was like, oh, no, everything's okay. We're good. This is just our new life. And then, like, boom, we're just, like, moving forward. And instead, when she asked me difficult questions, I met it with honesty in a way that she understood. Because, I mean, at first it was very confusing to her. Why are we here at Aunt Lala's house? Like, why are we not living with Daddy anymore? What is this? And I would just say, you know, Mommy and Daddy, we both love you. We are no longer going to be together because we love you so much that we have to make the best decisions to be the best parents, and we can't do that together. And she really understood that and was able to take that. And that's at 5.5 years old. She was able to take that and be like, okay. And making it about how in order for us to be the best parents and the best people, the best versions of us that we can be, we can't be together to do that. And it doesn't have to be like slamming the other parent or bringing them down, because that's one thing as well. Like, we've, you know, at least agreed upon throughout this entire process is that we're not going to do that. We're not going to talk about each other in that way. And whether or not, you know, if he ever goes against that, doesn't matter to me. I will never do that. I will never talk negatively about him, because I want my daughter to be able to make her own assumptions of both of us however she pleases. But I think for her, and I've heard her overheard her talk to her friends, and they'll be like, why don't you live with both your parents anymore? And it's like 5-6 year old talk, and I'm like, oh my God, what is she gonna say? And she's like, they just decided we were a better team this way.
Oh,
and so it's just like she really gets it. And I've seen kids who have been kind of essentially lied to and gone the other direction, where it's like all sugarcoated and we're not right for each other, and it's fine, like we're not going to talk about it. I've answered every single question she's ever had, elaborated on questions she's had, just to make sure that she has a good understanding that like this isn't her fault. This we have adult issues, but that doesn't mean we can't love you. That doesn't mean that we can't be a team for you.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it really is.
I'm sure confusion is a very hard aspect of children navigating divorce, and being honest with her is going to be very helpful long term with her in the future.
Yeah, I hope so.
Straightforward answer, you know, that is age appropriate, of course, I'm sure, is the most therapeutic course of action. Yeah, I would say from a kid's standpoint, I wish that my parents would have checked in with me more and been like, how are you, you know?
Yeah,
like
asking how you were feeling about the situation.
Yeah, that would have been really cool, even when I was a kid, because I told them I needed therapy. I told them that I did, and they didn't ever listen. And, you know?
You told them that you want to be part of the club.
Yeah, that I wanted to be part of the Rainbow Club.
So please get a divorce.
I know, yeah, exactly. So just actually listen to your kid. Ask them how they're doing, you know?
Check-ins.
Like, yeah, check-ins are huge. They're really important. they are also little humans.
Yeah.
That have emotions.
I think it's super important to remember that when you're talking to your kid throughout this entire process, is that they are human too. They have emotions about it. Mm-hmm. And it's okay if they aren't okay with it at first. It's okay if they have, you know, some kind of pushback of like, no, I want this. In my circumstance, we didn't have that. And I don't know if it's just the age. I don't know if it's the fact that she just trusted both of us that we were making the right decision for her. But I think honesty above everything too, because I mean, kids, like we've said before, can sense different energies. And I think if you're not being honest with them, they can kind of feel that. And then they're confused even more about why this is happening.
All right. Here's the next one. What lessons did you learn about personal growth and resilience?
I learned that I'm much stronger than I thought I was. I mean, I thought this whole experience would break me. I thought I would be even worse off. I mean, all the negative things ran through my mind immediately after making the decision. But I knew that I could make it through it. I mean, if you think back to any hard decision you've ever made in your entire life, you made it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that I had to constantly remind myself of, is like, no matter what, like, you're going to make it through this. And I would even go back as far as to think about something super painful I went through either in the marriage, before the marriage. And I would think, you know, I thought I'd never make it out of that. But here I am. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that's how I found myself through that. Found out I was very resilient.
Everything's figure outable. On the gravestone.
It will be there, I'm telling you. If I die first, y'all better make sure that somebody puts it there.
It'll be there. Don't worry.
I think the biggest thing I learned, because I will say I personally did probably hit my lowest low that I ever have been. Like, I probably was as broken as I hopefully will ever be in life. And I don't know if it was just the combination of things that I was doing to try to help that, between therapy and journaling and reading the books and doing all the right thing. But one day the light switch just turned on and I just thought, this is only as heavy as I allow it to be. Mm. So whatever you are carrying is only as heavy as you allow it to be. And there was just a day I decided that I was not going to let it be heavy anymore, and I was not going to let it be this miserable bottle of wine ice cream of person every single night. And that at the end of the day, it is figure outable. You know, I had survived every challenge up until this point, and I have made it through it. And after time and things heal, it's not going to be as hard as I probably thought it was going through it. But the day that I essentially just took the weight off my shoulders and set it down was the day I started to turn into that growth.
Mm. I love that.
I do too. Yeah. Shifting your mind frame.
And our mindset plays such a huge role in how we feel about everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't even think we always can recognize how heavy it is weighing on us and our decisions.
And sometimes we do just get stuck in that cycle. I had a lot of life things going on during this divorce process, leading up to the divorce process. And I felt like every day I was waking up just saying, you just got to get through this day. Mm. And you just got to get through this week. Or after this weekend, it'll be okay. Mm-hmm. And I found myself just in a mindset of having to get through everything or not looking forward to anything, really.
Yeah.
And taking that heaviness away, took away a little bit of that mindset. It's difficult to get yourself out of that and change your thought process from I have to I get to. Mm-hmm. Mm. But it's doable, and that mindset makes a huge difference.
Mindset is everything.
I'm just trying to be one of those DeLulu girlies on TikTok. It's manifesting my best life.
Honestly, though, totally manifest it, girl.
Yep. We got the power. We can do it. Trick your brain.
Yeah, you really can.
That's what it is. Yeah.
I mean, psychology shows that we can make our brains think lots of things. Yeah, yeah. So
it's not the boss of you.
That's true.
All right. Looking back on your divorce journey, what are some key insights or pieces of wisdom you would like to share with other women that are going through similar experiences?
I've got lots of wisdom. Hopefully I'm wise now, right?
I think we're wise now. I think like...
You look wise.
Yeah.
I think that paper the judge signed really said, you're a wise woman now.
You learned some things. I think for me, which is... This is hard to do, I think, for anyone in any sort of conflict, especially when they're on a losing end or acting out of fear, is to not let your emotions get the best of you in your behavior. For me, I did have several extremes to that, whether that was the very sad, crying, emotional aspect of it, to all the way on the other end of the screaming, rage, anger that came from it. Which I know it's very hard to control some of those feelings in that, but trying to keep a little bit more of a level mindset during the process and not letting your emotions fully dictate your words and actions would be very helpful. Easier said than done, but looking back, I do realize that I made part of the process harder for me by acting out of emotion.
Maybe, but... You know, you listen to whatever you wanted to do.
This is true.
Like, if that's what you need to do. And I did it at the time. Yeah. If that's what you got to do.
I think it's... like, I agree with you. And as you were saying it, like, two different instances popped into my head of things I did out of emotion, right? Mm-hmm. And almost immediately, I was like, ooh, that's what I'm going to say, is the two instances where I acted completely out of emotion. But what I'm realizing... Now, looking back at that, it's been 8 months ago. I just don't think I was healed yet. And I don't think that I gave myself enough time or enough space in the beginning to feel all of the things I needed to feel. And I think that was partially being, you know, making excuses, right? Like, oh, I'm caught up in motherhood. Oh, I'm so busy. Oh, I've got this and that going on. It was summertime. So like my kid was out of school and having to entertain her. And then her dad was working a lot. So I pretty much was her sole parent for that, those first like 6 weeks of being separated. And so I threw myself into a season of busyness right as I got myself out of that situation.
Which is probably a blessing and a curse.
Yeah. It was a blessing and a curse because there were two different instances where I let my emotions get the total best of me. And because I was kind of acting, I think, out of a little bit of pride, I didn't want to necessarily recognize that those were because I was so upset and emotional about the divorce. I wanted to believe that I was strong enough because I made this decision and I did this. But I think it's important to note that even if you're the one who makes the decision, that it's still very difficult and it's still very painful. And there's still such a grieving process after you make the decision, even if you had made the decision months before, you know?
Grief does not have a timeline.
It does not. And it likes to show up right in your face. And you really don't get a warning about it. And I think it's important to allow yourself to grieve, allow yourself to have time, and don't throw yourself into a season of busyness just to try to not feel those feelings.
I think the, you know, to talk on that, the no timeline is don't expect everything to have to change or need to change right away. You know, just because you filed for divorce does not mean you need to pack up your life in one weekend and leave. That was maybe our emotions speaking a little bit. But it's a big life change to begin with, and you don't have to push that timeline any faster than you're ready for.
Yeah.
Even when it's all said and done and judge signs the paperwork, if you're still grieving that process, it's okay. You have to give yourself the timeline that you need.
Give yourself some grace. Because you're going to need it.
Wow, what a great follow-up question after that conversation. So did you ever have a divorce fantasy where you dramatically storm out with a suitcase and sunglasses? And if so, how did it measure up to reality? Well, I think we already briefly touched on this.
Y'all both did that.
Let's see, you left in the middle of the night and I packed up a U-Haul while my husband was out of the state.
Yeah.
Go us.
Be movie scenes.
Yeah, it felt like a movie scene. I'll tell you what. It really did. I guess there was one time where we were in the middle of a fight a really bad fight. And I remember thinking to myself, I could pack my bags in 5 minutes and be gone. Mm. And I like fantasized about it. Like it played over and over in my head as I sat there and just listened to him speak at me about whatever the hell it was we were fighting about this random Tuesday or whatever day of the week it was. I just thought, I could get my shit and go right now, right in front of you. And when I left in the middle of the night, he was not home. He knew I was leaving. I didn't just up and...
You just didn't take your child and run away.
I didn't just take my child and run away. We were in the middle of like a very heated argument going back and forth. And there were some things that were said that I had promised myself that like I was done hearing that shit. Like I was done listening to someone threaten to do something to themselves that that would impact our family, and listening to the lack of care or love in their voice when they said it to me. And I was just done. And in that moment, my heart was racing. Everything in me was like, are you a terrible mom for this? Are you a terrible person for this? But I think what you have to recognize too, and what was like a huge thing for me in this moment, was it doesn't fucking matter what anyone else thinks about you. It doesn't matter what anybody wants to put on you, because nobody else is living your life. Nobody else is sitting in your shoes and doing this shit for you. So like, I'm sorry if you're not like feeding me, paying my bills, you don't get to have a say-so in my fucking life and what I do with it, you know?
Quite honestly, people don't care.
They really
if
don't.
If they have 2 minutes to gossip about you over coffee in the morning,
they'll do it.
They're going to do it. Mm. And then next week, they're going to gossip about someone else. Mm. They truly do not care what they are doing with your life. If they're not sitting at your table, don't care about their opinion.
No. And if they're sitting at your table, they're not, and they're talking bad about you, they're not caring about you.
Mm-mm. Kick them out of the table.
Right.
Get the fuck out of here.
You don't deserve to eat with me. I'll eat alone. I've done it before.
You cannot sit with us.
You can't sit with us. On Wednesdays, we wear pink. It's fine.
Here we go. I think this is the last question we got, y'all.
All right.
If you could give your past self one humorous piece of advice to make the divorce process a little easier, what would it be? Crickets.
Okay. I'm gonna air a little bit of a dirty laundry thing that I did. It is kind of funny.
Do it.
If my ex listens to this podcast, or anyone that knows him, you didn't hear me say this. But I did make a shared note on my iPhone and sent it out to everyone who's in my support group that has my back. And I labeled it reasons why blank is a piece of shit. And all of my friends just started adding to this list.
I love this. Why didn't I do this?
Of all the things that they didn't like about him, or what kind of brought me a little bit of joy is my friends noticed when he did stuff in group outings to me that they didn't like and just never said to me. And I was like, dang, like these guys really did pay attention to like some of the bad stuff that happened. So that was a little funny. I did have lots of laughs from that. It was a little bit therapeutic because I got a little bit of gratification that I was, other people were feeling the things that I was. But yeah, nobody tell them, please.
I think that's super interesting, though. You really learn what people thought about your spouse after you're no longer with them. And you're like, whoa.
Yes, which was heartbreaking and refreshing at the same time. Because there was a little bit of validation of some of the feelings that I had had that I hadn't necessarily shared with family and friends.
Yeah.
That they also saw or felt. But at the same time, I was a little hurt because if they had seen these things and felt these things and never told me, that did kind of crush my trust a little bit.
Right.
Because anyone who's in my close circle, I trust you completely and honestly, and I expect the same in return. So knowing that they let me go into such a big life decision without truly telling me how they felt about the situation. So I had some hard conversations after that. Was like, hey, if you ever don't like someone, please don't let me marry them again. Like, let's not do this twice.
Don't let me do that.
I will say I've been the friend on that side of a divorce, and like it's almost like you don't know if you should say something because you want to be supportive of your friend's choice. you know.
Well, it is awkward.
It is super awkward. And like, I fell into that too, where I'm like, that finally got to tell the truth about my friend's soon to be ex-husband. And I'm like, oh yeah, I knew it from the first time I met the guy. Like, he sucks. He sucks. So, but yeah, it is weird. And I could see it
and
being a
breach of
trust. And
it's an awkward spot,
yeah,
being the friend too.
Right.
And that was relayed to me as well, but I told them, I was like, never again. Yeah. Just tell me. I can take it.
I love that.
If you want an honest opinion, just come to me and ask me, because I'm going to spit the straight fact.
Oh, I got them too.
How I feel about it. Right.
We like honesty around here.
We do.
Yeah, it's great.
We encourage it.
Yeah. I guess
that is my only humorous piece of advice.
I like it. I like it a lot.
I think that's a great place to end, though. Yeah. A little bit of laughter, a little bit of fun.
Mm-hmm. It is. There is happiness at the end of the tunnel.
There is happiness. And yes. Laugh through the tough times. They don't last forever.
Right. Honestly, I found so much humor in some of the worst moments, and I think that's beautiful.
But you got to.
Yeah.
You know?
It's also a coping mechanism I've adapted.
I mean, I nervous laugh all the time.
All the time. I can't control it.
Nope.
All right. Well, if you're listening to this, you're going through any of the things, we hope that you have gained some insight from your fellow lovely ladies here at Beautifully Bear. We are here for you. And if you would like to hear anything on the podcast, just don't forget to write in. You can find the information in our bio and join our group.
Yeah, come hang out.
All right. Thank you for listening to the Beautifully Bear podcast.
Bye.
Bye.